Hi, everybody. This is your host, Brian, for the Beyond Buildings podcast, where we meet innovative and inspiring facilities leaders from across the country. In this episode, I chat with Lee Raspberry, who is the Director of Construction and Planning for Bastrop Independent School District. He has an extensive background in controls and HVAC and has served as a Director of Maintenance and Operation at several districts prior to his current role. In this episode, Lee discusses his utilization of machine learning and artificial intelligence to optimize the building automation system. He also covers the importance of being scrappy and taking calculated risks to find solutions that ultimately help the kiddos. Lee is a very bright mind and shares a great deal of actionable insight. Let's dive in. Hey, Lee, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today. Just to kick things off, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself, kind of your background, your career, and what you're doing now?
All right, Brian, I appreciate it. And thanks for the invite. I know that we've tried to get together on a couple of different occasions, and I'm glad we were finally able to make it happen today. So thank you. I appreciate you including me. I'm currently the Director of Construction and Planning for Bastrop Independent School District in Bastrop, Texas. I've been here a relatively short amount of time. Prior to that, I was with Del Valle Independent School District as Director of Maintenance and Facilities. Previous to that, Director of Maintenance and Facilities for Lockhart Independent School District. Previous to that, Comal Independent School District, where I was the Systems Administrator for HVAC and Controls. And then prior to that, I was the energy manager for Judson Independent School District in San Antonio. So I have traveled a little bit. But I have, what's funny is that in my career, I have not necessarily traveled for a position. I have been moving my entire household and everything. And so that's required me to shorten my commute over the years. So I've been in K through 12 about 13 years. I love what I do. I love the operation side. I started off in the energy management side, which I still love today. Sustainable building practices, that sort of thing. Indoor air quality. And I guess, Brian, that what I do today, even on the construction side, is really driven by trying to achieve outstanding results for students every day.
Great, man.
If I didn't believe that, I wouldn't be doing this. And so that's kind of the driving force. I guess I get up every day and I say, what can I do today to increase student achievement? Somehow, some way, what can I do? And so that's kind of the driving force behind what I've been doing for the last 13 years and what I continue to do.
That's great, man. Is that the primary reason that you got into K-12 facilities leadership?
That's a funny story. Prior to getting into K-12, obviously I worked in the private sector, and I would, the position that I had prior to entering K-12 was I worked for a mechanical contractor, a large mechanical contractor, and I built and sold HVAC PM programs. And I kind of went outside of the standard scope, if you will, for preventative maintenance and started looking at these units from a more sustainable standpoint. I didn't agree that a lot of unitary equipment had a life cycle of, 12 or 14 years. I wanted to be able to, through preventative maintenance, I wanted to be able to push that life cycle out to 20 and 25 years, even on a piece of unitary equipment. And so that's what got me interested in that. And then I decided to, I started looking into getting a lead accreditation. And so just out of the blue, I started studying for my lead accreditation. And while I was still with this mechanical contractor, I went and sat for the exam and I passed the exam. It was then I realized I didn't have anything to do with it. Here I've got this lead accreditation and I can't really put it to work. And even though the company that I worked for thought it was great, it didn't really translate well from a PM service standpoint. So that was kind of a turning point for me, I guess, in my career, in that I started to really reevaluate where do I want to be 10 years from now. Mm-hmm. I was well into my professional career. I had already been in mid-level management prior to my tenure with this HVAC contractor, and I kind of decided I needed to reevaluate what I wanted to do. And all the signs kept pointing back towards sustainable facility management, lead accreditation, certified energy manager, all these things I found to be extremely interesting to me. And I just felt like on average, we do a very, and I say we, is just as a society, we do a very poor job of managing these buildings that we're in. you know, we spend a ton of time in these buildings professionally. You know, if you think about the time that you spend 8 to 10 hours, sometimes longer a day, 5 days a week, 60 hours a week, whatever, a lot of times in a building, in some sort of an occupied building. And I just feel like, I still feel this way, that we can do a better job of creating a more conducive atmosphere through energy management, energy and resource management, indoor air quality, all of these things, and not incur some astronomical cost while doing it. You know, a lot of it just, you know, standard practices, you know? And so that was kind of the driving force behind me getting into facility maintenance. I started on the energy management side. I applied for a job that I had no background in, but I can write a resume and I can put together a 100-day business plan. And I actually did a video resume and I submitted this video resume to the school district and they called me right away.
Awesome.
Yeah, they'd never seen anything like that before, you know? And so anyway, so that's how it all started.
Yeah.
And once I started the process, once I got into K-12 and I started seeing some, you know, some of these antiquated systems and these dilapidated buildings, and then I understood how they got that way. And it wasn't really the fault of anybody or any group of people or any department. It was just, that's the way it was in K-12. It's public money and it just, a lot of times the funding's not there. So there had to be, you know, I set out on a path to build a better mousetrap to take care of these buildings and to maintain these buildings. And so that's how it started.
That's great, Lee. Just one question for you. I'm always kind of interested how this goes for folks going from the private sector into the public sector.
Yeah.
Any surprises, pros, cons? Like, what was that like?
Yeah. So it was a little bit of a culture shock for me, because in the private sector, I don't want to say that funding for projects flows more freely, but it does flow more freely in the private sector a little bit than it does in the public sector, because it's public funded. And so you always have to, no matter what project you're working on, what initiative, what renovation, it doesn't matter what that is. You always have to view that from the perspective of being a good steward for the public dollar, or with the public dollar. And I'm a taxpayer, you're a taxpayer. And so I never really looked at it that way. I never really studied, you know, the makeup of a school district's general fund and how that money comes to be through interest and sinking and all of these other things, and maintenance and operations, what portion of the tax dollar goes to maintenance and operations. And so I didn't really know all of that. It was something that was unknown to me. So that was a little bit of a culture shock, coming in and finding out how projects are funded, how you go about getting approval to get them funded. It took me a few years before I was involved in a bond project. I had no idea how a bond project worked, you know? And then funny enough, the other thing was, my first year, I was constantly sick.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Constantly being around the kids, you think? Or
being around kids. I had multiple teachers and staff members, paraprofessionals. I had them tell me or warn me, hey, you know what? Make sure you get your flu shot. Make sure you get this. Wash your hands, all this, and all this other stuff, because these kids will get you sick. And I was like, come on. These kids aren't going to get me sick. My whole first year, I was like,
I hear you, man. Just having kiddos, I tell you what, like every year, this flu bug, or not flu bug, stomach bug hits our family.
Yeah.
And it's like the worst thing ever. Like, cause I'm usually the last one to fall, but I see the kids go down, they're throwing up. Then, you know, I'm like, it's not going to hit us. You know, like, just when I think that we've dodged it, then my wife gets sick and it's like, oh God, like I'm going to be next.
Yeah. You're going to be next. It felt like my whole entire first year at Judson Independent School District, I had something all the time. You know, I'd get rid of this and then I'd get this, and I was never sick. And then all of a sudden, but anyway, that stuff all wore off.
Now you got superhuman immune system. Like 200.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, cool. You know, maybe we can keep on pivoting here. I just, one of the things that I wanted to jump into, and one of the things that really, first of all, I've also got a passion for energy, and it's amazing what you can do in a building to reduce consumption without impacting the environment negatively. In fact, you can improve the environment and reduce energy. And it's just a fantastic thing to do.
Yeah.
And like you drew me to you, and you put on a presentation. It's been maybe a year ago in Orlando, around how you're using artificial intelligence in the building automation system. And that, I think that's something that our, our audience would definitely want to hear more about. Maybe you can just tell me a little bit about what the process was there, why you picked that technology up and what it did for you.
You know, I became accustomed 8, 10, 12 years ago, whatever it was, to looking for energy conservation measures that were, and you've heard the term low-hanging fruit, low cost, no cost. Back when I started in energy management in K through 12, it was a very tough department or position to fund. Okay. The other thing about that was when I was in Judson ISD, we had in Bexar County, we had the only self-funded energy management program in Bexar County. So we were self-funded. I funded the entire department, including the staff, the personnel, and the initiatives in that department through savings.
Wow.
And so I've always looked for these low cost, no cost, have tried not to create animosity with regard to a program. You know, a lot of times the very first thing that staff members will say is, well, here we got an energy management guy. He's just here to turn our lights off. You know, he's going to shut our AC off and that sort of thing. And I think once you explain to folks that 90% of the energy conservation measures that you can implement in a building don't impact the occupants much, or not in a negative way.
Yeah. What were some of the low cost, no cost things that you did?
Very first thing that we looked at are set point standardizations. Just bringing in set points, we looked at how we properly staged our buildings. We made sure that we brought our buildings online in such a way that we didn't bring on multiple chillers or cooling towers at the same time. We didn't bring boilers on or large pieces of equipment that have a huge amperage draw. We didn't bring this stuff on at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so we properly staged buildings. We brought in set points. We normalized set points, and we didn't do it from a global perspective as much as we did in the buildings. And so we would go out into the campuses, we'd go into the classrooms, and we would take readings with atmospheric equipment. And I would record that, and I would make sure that what we were doing was the right thing to do. And a lot of that was just spending time interviewing occupants, talking to teachers, letting teachers know what you were doing. I found out a long time ago that if you just take the time to explain to staff members what it is that you're doing and what the benefits are, you can develop a consensus pretty easy. When you explain to people that every dollar that you save through energy conservation is a dollar that can go back into education, that rings true with a lot of educators. That rings true with a lot of staff members and paraprofessionals. They understand that kind of discussion. It's better than just going in and saying, you know what, we're going to be, you got to get out of here at 4 o'clock to shut your air off. You're not going to gain any friends that way.
Right.
Most people are pragmatic if you give them a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. We recently had an all-company summit. Are you familiar with The Golden Circle by Simon Sinek?
No, I'm not. No.
So there's this concept and there's a circle. At the core of the circle is why. And then the middle layer is how, and the outer layer is what. And so pretty much everybody understands what you do. Like, you're turning the HVAC off at 4 o'clock. You're doing right. Like the what is understood by everybody, but it's not very powerful. It's like you're not going to motivate folks. You're not going to affect change. How is a little bit less understood. It's kind of the mechanics of exactly how you're doing something. So a few people understand how you do it, but if you can communicate from the why, like, why are we doing this? Very few people sometimes understand the why, but the best leaders, the best organizations, they start with the why. And it kind of sounds like that's what you did naturally, is explained.
I've got a book over here called Start with the Why.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like exactly what you did there.
Yeah. You know, and then we spent about a year just doing behavior modification. That's a term that bothers some folks, but there's really no other way to describe it. Behavior modification, you know, it's not shock therapy or anything like that. It's exactly what you're talking about. It's getting people to understand the why of what you're doing. All of that is great, but if you can't track this through data, and you can't produce the data, and you can't show trends and trending by capturing data, then all of that is, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. So it's all academic at that point. And so I've always been a data person. So gathering data, this in energy, on the energy management side, I mean, it's all data driven, all of it, 100% of it's data driven. Mm-hmm. I enjoy that too. I enjoy producing the data, because, you know, at the end of the day, if your data going in is clean, then it's coming out clean. And the results speak for themselves. So
Was there anything, Lee, that you tried that didn't work?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I did a pilot program in one of our large high schools. This high school was probably, gosh, I'm going to say it was probably very close to 400,000 square feet. It was a really, really big high school. And we already had units, mechanical equipment staged in that campus. It was a chilled water campus, but I did have rooftop units and I had some VRF in there as well. I wasn't so much concerned about that, but we already had the large machines were already staged. And I wanted to get a little more granular with that. So I started staging individual classrooms. And so I thought, you know, if I can achieve positive results by staging large pieces of equipment, maybe I can achieve even better results by staging individual spaces that are run by, you know, VAV boxes or fan coil units. And so I made the attempt to try to do that. And it didn't provide the results that I was hoping for. It got too granular, and at some point it just became, the results became lost in all of that. And I had a really, really hard time tracking it. I used some data collectors, mm-hmm. In some of the classrooms. And I wasn't able to, you know, I spent 6 months doing this and I wasn't able to show the results that I was hoping I could show. But that's how you learn.
That's how you learn. Yeah, I learned a lesson. So on the design side, we designed a building with a heat recovery chiller. And throughout the construction process, that wasn't something the contractors were familiar with. So it wasn't set up properly. So in the summertime, they were running their boilers and the chiller because they had to reheat the interior spaces. The chiller was supposed to deliver enough heat to do that. Long story short, we fixed the problem with the chiller in the plant and were able to function without running the boilers. But what I learned is to get that chiller to operate in such a fashion that it could actually generate enough heating for the reheat, we were using more energy than and more expensive energy, because electricity is a lot at that time, a lot more expensive than natural gas. What actually ended up being the best method for us is in the summers, what we were worried about, we just changed box minimums. There weren't any kids in the classroom. So setting the minimum down to zero. So if it didn't need cooling, the box could go down to zero. It meant that we didn't need reheat, which meant that we didn't need the heat recovery chiller or the boilers. Right. You just run it. You know, it's like on paper, this thing sounds fantastic. And I'm sure there are a lot of use cases where it does make sense. But to your point, when we look at the data, we're all patting ourselves on the back because we got this thing working.
Yeah.
And now the bill's even higher. But look, the gas bill's nothing, but you know, the electric bill's higher, and it's interesting.
Yeah, and then of course you factor in all of the additional fees from your utility company. Mm-hmm. At that point, it's not just a KWH or a BTU problem, you know.
Demand, yeah.
Yeah. But you really are, and I tell people this, look, in energy management, there have been a lot of people that have come before you that have created really good programs, really good initiatives. They've helped solve a lot of questions or a lot of problems that you'll find that you'll have the same problems in your school district. Don't recreate the wheel. There's no reason to recreate the wheel. But for lack of a better term, you really are a scientist of sorts, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. because you do a lot of fact finding, you do a lot of testing, you're looking for specific results, you develop hypotheses, you try to prove it out at the end of the day. Sometimes it proves out, sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, you don't get discouraged. You just start again, you know,
yep.
And at the end of the day, like I said earlier, at the end of the day, is the emphasis or is what it is that I'm doing? Is it contributing to a better space for kids to learn in and staff to teach in? If you can answer yes to that, then keep going.
Yep. That makes a ton of sense. So maybe we can move on to the kind of the AI piece. That's kind of intriguing, I think, for probably the audience.
Yeah. So in the vein of energy conservation measures, I started to graph specific classrooms and to see how specific classrooms were running from a graph standpoint, based on set points and that sort of thing. And so using a graph, if you can picture a graph, and for you HVAC people out there, along with a dead band, a 5-degree dead band, you know that if a unit is cooling or heating and it's within that dead band, it's doing what it's designed to do. When it's outside of that 5-degree dead band, is when the set point in the space changes and it calls for cooling or heating. It's the unit that functions outside of the dead band on the cooling side and on the heating side, that energy that's needed to fire that unit, whether it's fired by electricity or it's fired by natural gas or whatever the case may be, the energy that's used to fire that to bring the space back into set point again really is wasted energy. And the reason that's happening is because we're using our building automation, our controls in our schools. We're using controls really just as a static set point tool. It's just a static tool. We enter the set point, and we can, depending on the building automation system, you can change your dead band, although you don't want to get it too tight, because then you confuse the system. It doesn't know whether you're calling for heating or cooling. But we set it and forget it. We set the set point, the dead band for a space, and then we leave it alone. And as long as it maintains set point, we consider that to be a win, right? When the unit's running outside of the dead band, calling for cooling and calling for heating, that's wasted energy. So I started looking into artificial intelligence, and I thought, what if using AI, and there are people out there that do it, but I started thinking to myself, what if AI can learn, and we call it machine learning. What if using machine learning, you can shrink that dead band down where the system still knows that it's calling for heating and cooling, and the unit's not coming on or calling for heating and cooling outside of the dead band? So you take that wasted energy that you had before, and you're pulling it back down. So now your graph becomes a lot more streamlined, and you're functioning within that dead band and not above it and below it while your system is trying to call for heating and cooling. The system doesn't know any better. It just knows that if it wants to produce 72 in a space, then it's going to come on at 74, mm-hmm. right? It's going to call for cooling at 74. Well, we just waited 2 degrees where we didn't have to wait 2 degrees in order to call for cooling. We could have started calling at 70 for cooling. And the same thing goes on the heating side. I believe, and it's been proven out. There are companies like Brainbox and others out there that are doing this, and they're doing it successfully. I think Schneider's doing it as well. That over time, the machine will learn certain characteristics of the space, whether it be occupants, ambient temperature, CO2 levels. It has the ability to learn all of these things, develop algorithms so that it can be more efficient when it's heating and cooling the space.
Do you see this as kind of a table stake in the future? Like right now, it's certainly cutting edge. Like where do you see the future of building automation going?
Having worked in building automation and tracked it for the last 15 years, I guess, not near as long as a lot of people, right? I've seen the advancements in building automation, a lot of it driven by technology, some of it driven by code requirements. But I've seen the progression in controls, building automation, energy management systems. I've seen all of this over the last 12 to 15 years. And I just don't see how you can advance anymore 5 years from now or 10 years from now. I wouldn't even say 10 years, 5 years from now without involving some sort of AI mm-hmm. in there. I just don't know how you would do it. I think it's already been put out there. It's just a matter of time. It's one of those things that school districts will have to get and building managers will have to get comfortable with. Historically, school districts and maintenance personnel in school districts, and this is not a slight at them, I'm one of them, but historically, we're 8 to 10 years behind the technology curve when it comes to managing these buildings.
Right.
You know, we use building automation as from a static setting standpoint. Now there are people that use it to generate reporting and use it as a tool and it can be a robust tool. But I think on average, building managers in K-12, we only tap into about 50 to 60% of the capability of a very comprehensive building automation system.
100% agree. Well, the other thing too, you mentioned the static piece. Like I've noticed a lot of systems are kind of set up based on design loads or based on like a hypothetical scenario. It'd almost be like,
yeah,
Lee, what's the most you think you're ever going to weigh in your life? Right.
Yeah.
So like you're going to go through phases. Okay. I'm going to make you like a 2XL shirt. So it'll always fit. But most of the time it's going to be so baggy. You're going to be swimming in this thing. It's going to suck. And it's kind of like, sometimes with building automation, it's somewhat set up like that, you know, like, yes, this gym might have 3,000 people on it for graduation or what have you, but most of the time it doesn't. And the way that things operate, they're not always fine tuned and they're kind of statically programmed versus being flexible and tuned.
Right.
I think that makes a lot of sense, man.
Yeah, I mean, if you because your building automation system is not going to sense a load. It's not going to sense a it's not going to necessarily sense an occupant load.
Right.
It's been programmed for a full load, to your point, in a gym. Right. Well, what happens when you have a smaller event in there and you only have 150 people? You walk in there sometime and watch them. They all have blankets on their laps.
Oh, right. Well, and you might have like outside air ventilation for 3,000. I mean, depending on what kind of setup you have. I mean, if you have if you're monitoring CO2, maybe not. But a lot of districts don't have that. So you're bringing in ventilation for 3,000 people when you got 30 people in there.
You got 30 people in there. And the next thing you know, you've got condensation on your gym floor. You've got players right. that are slipping. And yeah, so I think that from an HVAC unit standpoint, an HVAC unit will do what it's told to do. Right. It doesn't have a lot of limits. It really doesn't. It's designed to do what you tell it to do. Well, if you're just inputting static set points or static parameters in there, it'll go with the static parameters that you provide. Mm-hmm. So if you have machine learning that's doing the same thing, that's smarter than static set points, right?
Right.
More intuitive, then the unit will respond to that in a positive way. The unit will produce what it's supposed to produce.
Just makes sense, man. It's like if you had your hand on the knobs and you're watching the room and you're adjusting it, you're going to do a better job. And so like, can you make a machine learning and AI? I think that's a way to do it, right? Can you replicate that experience?
Yeah. And so over time, using different learning methods, over time, the system begins to understand more about what's going on in the space than you know what's going on in the space.
Right.
At least from an algorithm standpoint, and it never forgets that. It won't forget that, and it'll continue to replicate that based on the situation in the classroom.
Yep.
So I'm very interested in it. I'm looking to conduct a pilot in a campus, and I want to track it through data, and I just want to see if there's a market improvement over space and thermal comfort and indoor air quality in a campus that's using machine learning versus static set point parameters or static setting parameters. So I don't see how it couldn't be, honestly.
Right. Yep. So, I'm sure there'll be challenges, but. Well, this is kind of dangerous. I think we could both nerd out over this for probably 3 or 4 hours.
Well,
put everybody to sleep. This could be like a great episode to play when you're like having trouble falling asleep. I don't know. Depends on what you're into.
What's that one guy that's got the AM radio after midnight?
Right. Either you're going to get jazzed about this conversation and you're going to be pumped, or you're going to be put to sleep. Yeah.
And here's one of the byproducts of this. And as you know, in the business that you're in as well, that there's not a school district anywhere that doesn't have staffing challenges, right? Sometimes we have the funding for positions, but we can't find qualified people. Sometimes we need qualified people really bad, but we don't have the funding in place to post a position and to go hire somebody. But if you're able to, and I'm sure there's going to be people that don't agree with this. Through artificial intelligence or machine learning, if you're able to take a controls technician and reassign them somewhere else within your department, maybe you move them to where they're just on the 24 volt installation side and they're going out and they're checking controllers and they're checking valves and they're doing these things and they're doing PM on your control system, on your parts and smarts and all of that stuff. If they're doing that versus spending a lot of time like a building engineer sitting in front of a monitor in changing set points and changing parameters on a system. If you already have that covered through machine learning, you can expand a program. I talked earlier about preventative maintenance. Maybe you enhance your preventative maintenance program.
Right.
Maybe you're able to increase your life cycle cost of some of this equipment, this unitary equipment, because you've been able to move one of your technicians to your PM program.
Right. So, yeah, you're not talking about cutting jobs. Like there's still a huge vacuum. It just, you can do more. And let this thing
do more. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, maybe coming closer to time here, just want to get into kind of a few last questions. First of all, sure. Within your career, what's one of the times you've enjoyed the most and why?
You know, I there's been a lot of them, to be honest with you, Brian.
Yeah.
Look, I don't care who you are. Everybody likes some form of recognition mm-hmm. for a job well done. Right. Everybody does.
Yeah.
When I was in Judson Independent School District, we were the first district to develop and build a comprehensive demand response program with the utility provider, CPS. And so CPS Energy had a demand response program. We were the first large school district to bring it in and start building a program during the summer, a demand response program. That program, some 13 years later, is still in place. And Bexar County, Judson Independent School District is the largest recipient of money, of savings and checks from CPS Energy of any school district in the 13 district area. And we started out by printing off copies of the demand response graph and thumbtacking them in the hallway.
If you don't mind, if you're able to share, do you know like roughly what the financial impact was in dollars?
So they annually receive reimbursement checks from CPS. Don't quote me on this, but I've seen checks in the $400,000 range.
Annually? And for 13 years. So you're talking millions of dollars saved.
They have not impacted the learning environment one bit.
That is fantastic.
They have only impacted unoccupied spaces for the most part. And so they have grown that program. There's a couple of guys over there. Andy Jimenez and David Ayler have done an outstanding, they've done yeoman's work by taking a program that we started out with. They built it out. I mean, they've become the go-to guys for how to build a demand response program.
What a legacy, man.
Yeah. And so that I still love that. I still love that. I'm not involved in it anymore, but I get goosebumps looking at how well they're doing with that program because they didn't kill it. They didn't allow anybody to kill it. They grew it. And you go back and you look at all of these golf check photos that they're in with the superintendent, the board of directors. They love standing behind those $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 checks once a year.
Well, and taking it back to about the students, right? Ultimately, that's going back to making that school district be able to serve their students better and not burden the taxpayers. Like it's a double win.
Yeah, it is.
Taking it down to maybe a darker notch, I'm not sure. What's been one of the most challenging, like looking back at your career, like what was one of the most challenging times and why?
You know, I think one of the most challenging, and it's probably still the most challenging aspect of my job. And I've not found it difficult to build a consensus with teachers and staff about the benefits of energy and natural resource conservation. When it's properly explained, I have found very few people. And if there were more, they didn't say anything to me. But I have found very few people that had an opposition to a program that was going to not necessarily reduce or cut energy, but it was going to be more responsibly used, right? And as a result of that, the impact of that was going to be savings that you can track and that you can show. And nobody was going to be inconvenienced. Students weren't going to be inconvenienced. We weren't going to cut your lights off. We weren't going to cut your AC off. We weren't going to kick you out at a certain time of the day. Mm-hmm. That was never part of a larger program. What I found to be challenging was convincing my colleagues that this works, because you have to look. I mentioned it earlier. I think most people that you come across in life have a certain level of pragmatism. Mm-hmm. In other words, you can convince them that something makes sense. If it actually does make sense, you can convince them that it makes sense. But there are people that just, you have to drag them kicking and screaming to a better place or a better end result.
Yep.
And it hasn't been a lot of people, but there have been certain folks that I've worked with over the years that no matter how much I showed them, no matter how much I showed them on paper, they were not going to buy into it.
Right.
They were going to fight.
It's not logical.
Yeah. Yeah. They were just, if they were in a position where our two roles enhanced one another or we had overlap, I relied on them just like they relied on me. And a lot of times I didn't get the cooperation that I needed to move forward with something. And so that was challenging, you know?
Right. Yeah. I hear you, man. Like you run into technical challenges sometimes. The good thing about technical challenge is it's solvable. It's logical.
You work it out.
People challenges, sometimes not so easy. Well, I know we're coming up on time. I like to end every episode here. Thinking about folks that are getting into a facilities role, getting into public education, maybe getting into building automation. What advice would you give to our audience?
So I would say if you have an interest in any form or fashion of building operations, whether it be from a building management side, property management side, building automation and controls, HVAC, doesn't really matter. If you have an interest in it, go do it. Because, I mean, this is the best move that I made 13 years ago. I don't even know where I would be today.
Right.
I look back on it and sometimes I kick myself for not doing it sooner because I love what I do. Because you know what? At the end of the day, I have no problem saying I made a difference today in the lives of kids, man. I have no problem saying that because I know it's true. I created a better environment today for academic achievement for kids. I implemented something that provided a higher level of safety and security and comfortability in the classroom. And I can say that, and I can go home and I can come back and I can do it the next day. And it's another challenge the next day. And I will tell you that the opportunities are endless. If you're an outside the box, and this role kind of requires somebody that is used to outside the box thinking with limited guideposts, right?
You got to be scrappy.
You got to be scrappy, and nobody's going to fault you for trying things as long as you're going to produce positive outcomes for kids. So I would tell people, whether you're on the K-12 side or you're in the private sector, but you're thinking about getting your certified energy management certification or any of the other certifications or licenses out there, do that. Get your professional license. I mean, I've got an ASHRAE license as well, and or ASHRAE certification as well for building energy. BEEP. I just call it BEEP. And so I would say do it and stay in it, because guess what? We're not getting rid of buildings. We're not getting rid of air conditioning. We're not getting rid of heating. We're not getting rid of thermal comfort. All those things are always going to be around. And go out there and be a part of it. You know, create a better tomorrow for kids. That's what I say.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you, bro.
That's awesome, man.
Appreciate it.
Well, hey, man, thank you so much for your time. I know you're a busy guy, and sure. Really happy to have the chance to get you on the podcast. And thanks so much.
Take care.